Michael Wilbon joins Waddle and Sylvie Wednesday afternoon at 5 for the ride home.
On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Hope you're having a good Wednesday. Hope everyone is happy and healthy and safe.
Sunny out today. The weather is starting to break a little, fellas.
I saw a 70 in Tracy Butler's forecast, Waddle. Wow. In her 7-day, I believe it's for next Tuesday.
That's impressive.
It's baseball weather, without the baseball, though. But we'll have to all play in the backyard soon, because that's really all we got. And let's talk about all of that with Jeff Passan, who is awesome. Reporting on all the latest with the changes and the negotiating that went on last week and some differences that will happen this year. Jeff, first of all, how are you and your family doing?
We are healthy, which is all you can ask for at this point. So I appreciate you guys asking and hope the same for you.
How have you guys as a family been able to kind of get through some of the down moments? Are you guys big board game family or... what do you guys do to pass the time?
Copious amounts of alcohol.
Excellent. Even the kids?
I mean, you said the family, right?
That's true.
Come on. Okay. I mean, we're not exclusionary here. No, did I? I'm trying to think. I don't think I did this with you guys. So I'm sort of the principal of school.
Right.
Really?
I kind of outline the... what the day is going to look like. And, you know, I've wanted to do all of the things in homeschool that I feel like our public schools, not just here in Kansas City, but really all around the country, don't do. So, you know, we've spent a lot of time doing like logic games and logic puzzles. And, you know, I'm teaching, I have a sixth grader and a second grader and I'm teaching them Spanish.
And you were the cool teacher back in school.
Yeah, yeah. We've also got a creative writing block. And in this creative writing block, the prompt for the first day of this was Captain Corona. And I figured that my kids, you know, they would think of like the doctor who finds the vaccine and kills coronavirus. And he's a superhero named Captain Corona. Instead, my 12-year-old Jack writes this. The day was March 23rd. Time stood still as two powerhouse teams in the Beer 12 conference were about to have a huge showdown. Captain Corona stood with his team of rum, wine, vodka, and liquor to get them pumped out.
Oh, that's a dream
team. Bud Light stood there with no flavor at all.
Oh. What did you respond? Like, did you give him a stern look and then go in the other room and laugh, or did you applaud him and high-five him?
Not at all. When I read the line, Bud Light stood there with no flavor at all, I looked at him and said, this is better than anything I'm going to write this year.
You're making us...
And actually, you know, I joked about alcohol. We do not drink at home. We just don't drink at home. So the fact that the child knew this much about alcohol really threw me for a loop. Like, I totally did. I was like, where did you learn this stuff? Like,
the bar you drag him to every day at 9 a.m. That's where.
And you're making us all look bad, Jeff. I mean, the e-learning has been a disaster for some of us.
Now, I mean, listen, there have been moments. You ask about board games. You know, I, as part of the schedule, like, you know, we wake up and at, you know, 8 to 9 breakfast, start school at 9 o'clock, and I have math on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But I'm not going to do math 5 days a week because you're gonna lose the kids if you do it like that. So on Tuesday and Thursday, we have an hour and 15 minutes blocked out for a game of Catan. Have you guys ever played Catan before?
Yeah, someone mentioned that, right, that we're going to learn. I have younger kids, so Jeff Meller told me that I'm going to learn to love it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And our 7-year-old plays and has actually gotten pretty good at it. Like, he beat us a couple days ago. But we're big on Catan. We got Scrabble out. We'll do the, you know, I mean, like, crazy people do Monopoly. Monopoly just, A, it takes forever. B, keeping track of the money is a pain. Like, they're just, I like the idea of Monopoly more than the actual execution of it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I have older kids, so my wife just bought a net that you can attach to your dining room table and you can play ping pong. So we're going to have drinks tonight and play doubles ping pong for as long as, you know, the relationship exists, because there's a lot of fighting.
I saw a video of somebody else who did that, actually. And there was this, I think it was like a grandma who was playing against her grandson or something like that. And poor grandma lost her balance and went head first into the hutch.
Whoa.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, no, that'll be me tonight.
And
there's
Waddle
no question.
Always gets hurt. It's hilarious.
I'll be grandma tonight.
It's crazy. Jeff, there is a lot of baseball stuff, so where do we start with this?
It's your show, buddy.
Well, let's go with, what are they brainstorming right now about seasons and venues, and where are we at this point?
I think they're brainstorming a bunch of different possibilities, and each of those possibilities depends completely upon this virus that we simply do not know when it is going to be contained, and depends on the waste that it lays in its path. And I sit here every day hoping to get good news and hoping that we at least see some flattening of the curve. It's not going to happen for a little while, though. And as long as it doesn't happen, I think Major League Baseball and all the other sports, honestly, are just going to be in planning mode, because the news is going to be pretty bad coming up. I mean, when you see Donald Trump come out and say that, you know he does not like uttering those words. So that was a pretty sobering moment, I think, yesterday. And not sobering for the gravity that he laid on it, but the fact that he never likes, you know, saying anything bad. And that was pretty grim what he said. So baseball right now, I think, is looking at a short-term plan, a middle-term plan, and a long-term plan.
Jeff, if
short-term plan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I said to Waddle the other day, I said, I would do this right now. I would sign up for this plan today without chancing it if I could. But Waddle said he'd be more optimistic. If you could get me a regular season in August, September, and October with a playoff system in a venue or some venues in November, that I would happily sign up as a fan for that. Would you, or are you more optimistic than that?
Are you signing up as a fan thinking that these games are going to be played in major league stadiums?
Not sure.
Okay. I think that's realistic then, yes. I think that is, I'm not going to say that's the likeliest outcome, but I think that is a satisfactory outcome right there. Because if you have 3 months, you know, we're talking 12 weeks, 12 plus weeks, more like 13 or so, we're talking, you know, 7 games a week with doubleheaders, we're looking at somewhere between 80 and 100 games at that point. I think you could make a reasonable season out of what would amount to a half year to a little more than that. I think the midterm view that I was talking about was you start the game, you know, you start the season after the All-Star game. Like the All-Star game, where you bring the biggest names in the sport and the best players for the last 5 years and the people who are going to be the most intriguing. And let's say you have all kinds of voting going on online, you know, for the statistical studs, the Mike Trouts of the world, who obviously need to be there. And then you have young players who do fans want to see. And you load the teams with players like that, and you just sell it as this celebration of baseball coming back in Los Angeles. Like, it's pretty good. Like, it sounds pretty exciting. And there might not be people in the stadium to do this, but at the same time, I think there would be a lot of people tuning in. And the optimistic view is Sometime between mid-May and early June, you come back. And as much as I would love for that to be the case, as days go by, it seems increasingly difficult, but doesn't seem impossible. There's just a ton of planning that needs to go into effect in order to make that a possibility and make that realistic. And it's something that I don't know if a sport, even one that at the top tends to be pretty well organized and well run in Major League Baseball, can pull off.
Jeff, obviously these are all just projections because none of us know. There's very little certainty attached to anything in the whole entire world of professional sports. But in baseball, depending on how abbreviated the season is, and I'll let you take it where you think it's going to go, but what type of economic impact could the sport be facing going forward with luxury tax levels, with, you know, where teams are salary-wise? What is going to be, in your opinion, the economic impact, at least short-term?
I think the economic impact is that free agency this offseason is going to be a complete mess, and nobody's going to sign a long-term contract. I mean, the best case scenario I could see is Mookie Betts signs something that has cost certainty and an opt-out after 1 year. You know, if Mookie Betts signs an eight-year, $200 million deal with an opt-out after one season, I could see him doing something along those lines. And listen, 200 is not the 400 that he thought he was going to be getting. And maybe I'm misreading the market completely, but I look at the amount of revenue that baseball is going to be losing this year and know that revenues tend to be commensurate with the amount that players get paid. And if revenue goes down markedly, then player salaries are going to go down markedly. I look at next year as well. And honestly, as much as I would love to bank on a vaccine and one being successful, we don't know that that's going to be the case. And the idea of crowds gathering in places before there's a vaccine, I have difficulty seeing that. This disease is just far too communicable. And so I think it's going to be a long time until we have large amounts of people getting together in public, and that includes sporting events. And even after we have the vaccine and everybody has been vaccinated, it's going to take some time to get used to this. I mean, we're going to have potentially lived for a year plus of our lives isolated from people. And man, that is going to be weird as hell trying to go back and see what life is like after that. So I think that baseball is going to suffer in that respect too. And not just baseball guys, I think all sports are going to deal with this. I have trouble seeing college sports coming back at all, like this year. I mean, think about it. It's one thing if you can take an NFL team and isolate them. You can take an MLB team and isolate them. If you can take an NBA team and isolate them, you can put everybody in the league in a biodome, essentially. Like, you can do that. Can't do that when the kids have to go to class.
Yeah.
And if kids have to go to class on college campuses, I mean, I don't know. Are all classes going to be done via distance learning? And is that how you're going to do it with college students who are athletes? You're going to sequester them in areas where just athletes are and they get to go to class via computer? Like, I just don't know how reasonable something like that is. And these are all the questions that we need to be asking ourselves in the coming months when this thing starts to dissipate and we start to get back to what life is supposed to be like.
Yeah, all very, very good questions. There was one thing specific that really caught my eye when I read your piece last week, when the conversation between the players and the owners came to some sort of decisive understanding. And it was the issue of service time. And I was surprised about the concept that they were going to honor service time for a guy like Mookie Betts or Chris Bryant, or all guys, but guys that were up against free agency, even if there's no baseball season. I found that really hard to believe that the owners would give that in the negotiation. Can you elaborate on that and why the owners decided to you know, kind of give in on that topic?
I think some of the owners believed that the players were going to get service time in a grievance, you know, like in a grievance setting that the owners would have lost. and that they were trying to hedge their losses. They thought, okay, well, if there's a chance that we're going to lose, and it may not be a great chance, but it may not be a small chance either. And what we can get out of it is guaranteeing ourselves that if the season is canceled, already they're going to be losing $5 billion in revenue. Like, that's plain and simple. They lose $5 billion right there. So if the season is canceled and they're losing $5 billion, they cannot possibly afford to have an arbitrator rule in favor of players who are trying to grieve their contracts if Rob Manfred were to suspend them. And so that's another liability there in the $4-plus billion that players would be owed that they could just get rid of in this deal. Additionally, they were able to get power in trying to bring the season back. Rob Manfred is clearly in charge of this. And while he can consult with the MLBPA, the way that the agreement is written is essentially it's at his discretion. And beyond that, the changes that they got in the draft and in the amateur market really push forward this idea that they've been saying for years about cutting back on amateur players being drafted. They're pushing back international signing, which lines up with the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement and the eventuality of an international draft. And when you look at the financial situations of so many of these minor league teams now, I don't even think Major League Baseball is going to have to fold 40 teams. I think 40 teams, unless minor league baseball starts up this year, and I don't know when that's going to happen. Unless that happens, all of a sudden we're looking at 40 teams potentially folding just because of financial problems. Hmm. So, I hate the idea of using a crisis and a tragedy to your own business ends, but in the end, MLB is looking out for MLB and the players are looking out for the players, and the players are concerned about the 1,200 people in their union. And it's why for years they have looked at the minor leagues and have bargained away the rights of the players who are not in their union yet but are going to be in their union in the future.
Jeff, really quick, before we let you go, are these things likely or unlikely to happen? I know it's fluid, so I'm not asking you to predict, but just tell me likely or unlikely. Got a list of like 3 or 4. Ties this year. If there's a game that goes 9 or 10, they're just going to end with a tie.
It won't happen. They would before that, they would do the starter runner on second.
Okay.
And I think that's a realistic possibility.
Seven inning doubleheaders.
Unlikely, but possible.
More playoff teams.
Will happen.
Will happen this year.
I would be stunned. I mean stunned if they didn't get more playoff games. It's revenue.
But yeah.
Like, people are going to be hungry for that on the TV side and on the player side and on the league side. I would be absolutely shocked if the playoffs aren't expanded this year.
You're the best, Jeff. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Be safe and healthy.
All right, boys. I'm going to go have a drink.
There you go.
Me too.
Jeff Passan. He's awesome. Good stuff on the schooling and the games. If you want to weigh in, there's a lot there, Waddle, and you're going to have to talk to me. You're going to have to give me a pep talk after some of the things that he was saying. You'll do that to all of us coming up next.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Oh, we have David tweeting us. He says, this is the most sobering baseball talk I can remember.
Eric? Meller and I were just having a conversation, and I'm on the other end of that.
Yeah, Eric tweets, me listening to Jeff's outlook for the future of sports, and it's a guy basically, you know, in the fetal position, sweating and everything. And then Spacebar tweets, Jeff Passan, a ray of effing sunshine.
I'm just telling you, he consented too to the possibility of games late in May or in June.
Said it's possible.
Right. So, I mean, like when he says you're going to be, I think, what was the line that got you most upset? That what in 18 months life is going to be social distancing for 18 months?
Well, yeah, for a year. We're going to be that, and also the fact of the college stuff, too.
Yeah.
No college sports, no college football?
I'm not ready to go there yet. Again, I'm putting my faith in the private sector that with pharmaceutical enhancements, research and development, and ramping things up, that I'm not trying to sell anybody false hope. I'm just not ready to concede that there won't be any college sports at this point. I'm not promising you they will. I'm just not really ready to say no at this point. I'm just not.
It's funny because I had a little more optimistic outlook of the way passing
and
games.
You're slep rock for crying out loud.
But the fact that like you gave him the idea, Sylvie, you said, is this possible? Is it on the table? Did you say June 1st? I can't remember what you...
August 1st.
Did you say August 1st?
That's what I said. Would you sign up for that now? August, September, October, playing baseball. And then he challenged me by saying, well, are we doing this without fans?
Yeah, And he said that was a possibility, and he even threw out the idea of maybe at the All-Star, you know, the All-Star game is the kickoff for the MLB season. And I personally, like, it's good to hear an MLB insider say, yeah, I think that's a possibility the way people are talking.
See, I wouldn't, I'm with you. I don't know how it's going to work. My hope is I'm not losing hope. I'm putting my faith, as I said, in the collective efforts of people that are really smart. Like the Microsofts and the Googles and all of those people, and then obviously all the pharmaceutical companies and everybody that is pushing for a common cause at this point. Who knows? Maybe they'll tell you that sending college students back to the campuses is the smartest thing to do, because they're widely known as, not all of them, but the majority of them, they are more capable of handling this than people my age and people that are significantly older.
Right.
And if you have them all sequestered in one spot on a campus, as opposed to having them integrating all over the place with older members of their family, whether it's their parents or it's their grandparents or others in the community, I'm just asking the question, where's the safer haven? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, and we've always said, you know, we've always been worried about expanding too much on guessing this stuff, because we're not experts in this. And we always, my hope is from watching all of this, and I could be completely wrong. So if you're a doctor or a nurse and you're one of these heroes, call in and let us know, because you guys deserve all the credit in the world. My hope is that by September, whatever it is, that these therapies, at least, while there's no vaccine yet, but it could happen next year, that the therapies are going to be good to the point where no one's going to be seriously ill or dying from this, or at least it will happen in very limited numbers, where yes, it could be something where people are still getting sick, but they're not getting sick where they need ventilators and the therapies are working. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And we go about our business then. And yes, people get sick then, like any other illness, and you deal with it. But I don't know if that's realistic or unrealistic. That's the hope that I'm holding on to, what you've been selling me, Waddle, that there have been so many good laboratories, so many good people in the private sectors, so many people working on all of this now together, that while the vaccine could still be a year away with all the research, that the therapies are good enough to get life back to at least semi-normal.
That's my hope. And I'm not smart enough to sit here and tell you I have any information on any of it. I'm just going on the assumption that, as you mentioned, the creativity and the brilliance of the minds of some of the people that work in the private sector in our country can pull together and find a way that we can get back to at least a limited form of normalcy sooner rather than later. If not, then that's just the way it is. I'm just not really willing to consent to, oh boy, I'm going to be stuck in my house until June 31st. Is there 30 days? 30 days has September, April, June. No, it's 30 days in June into June 30th without being able to do something. If that's the case, trust me, I will follow the lead and the advice of the medical people. I'm trying to be more optimistic.
Yep.
As every day goes by, and I'm not willing to give in yet.
Discussion we had without you today. This is when Meller was running around and Danny Zetterman was fueling Meller running around. We've always had conversations, not on this serious topic, but about like something big will happen involving something. And you're always like, Sylvie, don't get lost in this moment. A year from now, it will go back to the way it always is. So I want to know, like, from a fan's perspective, from if things will forever change here. And I want to bring up a couple of topics. If you want to weigh in, 312 312-332-3776. Also, all our great fans out there. We have another 2.5 shows for you to get a celebrity, someone famous on the show, the biggest name drop. We've had a lot of success in our time slot, the Waddle and Sylvie 2-6 time slot. We encourage you to get after it, whether it's a friend of yours, a friend of a friend, a friend of a friend of a friend, whether you're just trying to tweet someone, try to like enhance it in a way creatively where you can get them, convince them on Twitter. Send a message to someone that you think can be easily convinced. So, and tell them to call 312-332-3776. You could win meat along with gambling.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Biggest name drop competition rolls on. We're always here for you as we try and get through this together. 312-332-3776. We're always open to your shout outs as well. Wilbon coming up at 5 o'clock. So this is the conversation I was having with Meller and Danny. There's really not any person who's not being affected by this. Whether it's, you know, being sheltered, whether it's financially, the impact financially on almost everybody is out there. And we were talking about fans. You know, we've brought this up before about, you know, what will fans be able to get back from their tickets and everything like that. My question to them was earlier today, like the Bulls, let's use the example for the Bulls. The Bulls currently have been losing lots of season ticket holders because they have not been a good team to begin with. And not only are they not good, but their tickets are costly. To go to a Bulls game is a huge entertainment expense.
Where do they rank in terms of the rest of the league? Are they probably top 10%?
I would bet they're the top 3 to 5 ticket in the league next to the Lakers and Knicks. I would think they're somewhere in like the 3 to 5. That would be my guess. Tyler is looking up now, so is Meller, because they have those lists.
Bulls are third.
Third.
Behind the Knicks and Lakers.
Exactly where I thought.
Boy, well, you're getting a hot steaming bag of poo with a Knicks ticket, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's both of those teams. I mean, those are like, they've reached, and you've always said, the only time that these tickets will go back in value or they're not going to be raised or when they're not in demand anymore. You know, there's going to be a level eventually that we get to where people will no longer want to spend on that. And now with people hurting financially more than ever coming out of this, and especially with teams who aren't good, who are losing season ticket holders to begin with, do you believe specifically like a team like the Bulls, that they may have to reset their ticket prices? And I'm talking about a rollback that you can't charge people anymore $275 to sit in the 100 level for a basketball game.
I'm reluctant to say yes, because every professional team is going to be behind the eight ball, so to speak. I know they're professional teams. I know they're billionaires. But in terms of their cash flow and their revenue, they look at it differently than you and I and other people look at it. I mean, it's the math of big numbers. It's, you know, I don't think initially there's going to be a significant give back until they kind of get a feel for the market. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Because football will always be able to charge. You know, a team like the Cubs who has Wrigley Field, and as long as they're fairly decent, you know, we always talk about raising prices or not, but are some of these teams getting to the point because of the environment that we're going through now with A, it's going to be so long with mass gatherings like we've talked about. B, people are going to come out of this and their discretionary income is going to be more limited than it ever has been.
Well, I would think maybe the ticket prices for the less expensive seats as the current model sits, they may give the cheaper ticket price people a break, but I think they're going to look at the situation and say, hey, the guy that was paying whatever it was for these floor seats or several rows back, probably could weather the storm better than other people. And until I give up the, you know, to give up the fight to capture the same ticket price. So I think it's more likely that the, for lack of a better term, the little guy is going to get a break more than the big guy. So they may try to recoup some of what they lose with the little guy price with the big guy. Do you understand
right,
what I'm
right.
saying?
I know what you're saying. I just don't know what's right or what's wrong.
I don't either.
I always remember here where, like, and this is a totally apples and orange conversation, but, like, we would be sitting here for the Olympics and, like, the U.S. hockey team would be getting a ton of publicity, and I'd be like, Waddle, this is the best. This is the greatest. And you're like, Sylvie, I know it's good now, but it doesn't mean that more there are going to be more hockey fans because of this in 6 years from now. You know, and so I'm wondering when we are removed from all of this and things are back to, quote, normal in a year, what will be different? Are there different things? Are there things from now that will forever change?
I think there are some things that will forever change, but I think it'll be as much or at least initially, the behavior of people. I'm not so sure about how people. I think what you're going to have is fewer people going to games because there will be a fear factor. Even when they sound the all clear, I still think that there will be a fear factor.
So doesn't that, don't you think, because of, you had the, like, look at the team like the Bulls. Think about all the tickets they're going to lose this year, season ticket holders, because they stink. B, because some of the people can't afford it anymore. See, like you said, some people will be fearful that they don't want to go sit in an arena of 23,000. So don't you, I don't have a lot of great business sense like you do, but I would find it to be an upset that the Bulls don't roll back some prices here.
They will. And again, I think maybe they, listen, we're in uncharted territory. So it's really uncharted. Is it uncharted? Uncharted.
I'll accept either, Waddle.
I'm
going to
go with I think uncharted is wrong. Uncharted. We're in uncharted territory. So it's.
Well,
I mean,
I've always used uncharted waters, so that would be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. We are in a place we haven't been before. How about that?
Yeah, good.
So I don't know how everyone is going to respond. But again, I always say follow the money. And I mean, they're not professional sports, whether it's the Bulls, it's the Cubs, it's the White Sox, it's whoever it is. They're not in the business of not making money. They're in the business of making money. So they've got some interesting, you know, formulas that they're going to have to put together and they're going to have to work through to see where they finally believe the consumer is willing to spend. There's already models that exist prior to a pandemic. I don't know what the models are going to look like coming out of the pandemic, but if you're thinking that just through the benevolence of loving their fans, and again, I'm not talking specifically about the Bulls, I think you're going to be left at the altar there. I really do. If you're thinking like, I've supported this team, this, you know, Team X for all these years, and this has been a really difficult time, maybe there will be an across the board, you know, showing of compassion to the ticket holders. I wouldn't bet my own money on that because this is business. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know what you mean though, because when Vegas opens back up, are you going to be able to get discounts? Like, now you can get, you know, flights at such a small price.
I would think it's going to take a little bit for everyone to get their confidence back.
It could be.
And then, like, I don't know if it's like a compassionate rollback. I think it's like what you've always said. Supply and demand will fuel it. And I don't think there'll be a lot of demand for some of these mediocre teams for expensive tickets.
Like, I don't think that the Lakers are going to struggle with ticket prices.
They've got LeBron, right.
I don't think that the Cardinals are going to struggle. I don't think the Cubs are going to struggle, you know, relatively speaking. And think about it. When less tickets are sold because there is a fear factor, that's already a kick to your economic marbles. But now, the price of the tickets, if the price of the tickets goes down, and even unless you're selling them for $4 a piece, the fear factor isn't going to be overly enhanced by the price of the ticket. It's going to be, the fear factor is going to be, am I going to go to a baseball game and put myself at risk of getting sick? Whether the ticket's $24 or it's $40, What's the extra
$15? It's still demand, though. You know, that still goes into the demand.
It is.
If there's less demand for a ticket for whatever reason, doesn't that mean
that? But you're right. But if there's less demand, you got to raise the prices in some ways. Now, where does the demand go? Again, if you lower the ticket prices, how many more people are coming into your stands, and how many of them are going to be able to get over top that hurdle that is the fear factor? Is it a money hurdle, or is it a safety hurdle?
Do you know
what I'm saying?
I think it's going to be the bigger factor is going to be the discretionary income for a lot of people who are willing to, you know, like there's a lot of people like. Certainly, there's sponsorships out there. There's people. There's corporations who buy season ticket plans so that they can pass them out to, you know, their workforce and kind of split them and bring other people to games. That I'm not as worried about. But it's your average fan who wants to be a season ticket holder. How many people are going to be affected by what we're going through right now? Who are going to say, I just can't justify spending 41 home dates on the Bulls right now.
Right. You may be right. But what they do is then maybe they will give you a break on the price of the tickets, but your concession stand items are going to be exactly what they were before. It's a delicate balance, and I'm not trying to say all professional sports teams, you know, are cutthroat, but, you know, they're running a business, and they're going to have to go through these formulas to find out where, you know, the line of, you know, diminishing return exists.
Let's take some calls. Some fans, how do you feel about this? When all this is over, will you be rushing back to go to these stadiums, A, because of money, and B, because of safety? Are you maybe you'll be so thirsty for it that you'll rush back even faster than you would have if this was a normal year? 312-332-3776. Are you willing to spend the money? What about you long-time season ticket holders for the Hawks and the Bulls? Are you willing to spend as much going through what you're going through now? This is affecting everybody. 312-332-3776. Is it stupid to look for a rollback on season? We've never seen price cuts. It's usually just a freeze on the tickets. 312-332-3776. Have the celebrities call in the biggest name drop competition. And Wilbon at 5.
Waddle and Sylvie weekdays 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, trying to figure out how things will change permanently, if anything, or will we completely go back to normal? Once this is all finished, and once we're all clear, whenever that is, are you going to go back to games? You're going to buy tickets like you used to do? You're going to want to be in packed arenas?
It is a great question, and how teams are going to navigate this in terms of what they're going to ask their diehard fans to contribute in terms of ticket prices. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a great question. I really do.
Let's take some calls. Don in Elmhurst, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Don.
Hey, Waddle. Hey, Sylvie.
How's it going?
Hey, now.
It's going.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Bears season ticket holder, and, you know, when the payment was due on, it was March, it was like the end of March, and I was waiting for, you know, them to send out an email saying there's going to be a deferment of payment. The Packers, the Giants, and the Jets are the only three teams that deferred their payment, because there might not even be an NFL season, or there won't be. There might be a season without fans going to, you know, there'll be empty stadium games, but there might not be even a season with fans in the seats. So those are the only three teams that actually deferred the payment. While the world was ending, the Bears still wanted their money. So, you know, this is going to affect everybody. I mean, there's no stone unturned economically for people. There's no segment or industry that's going to be not affected by this.
Right.
So when things start to get back to normal, you're going to have a bunch of unemployed people. The wealthy have had their wealth raked over the coals by the stock market, so they're not going to spend any money. Companies aren't going to spend money because they're fighting to survive right now. So I don't know where the market's going to be for tickets. I don't think there is going to be one. So next year, when the Bears come calling for the money, I might have to say I can't afford it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to say that.
And I think because it's a 10-game schedule and it's the Bears, that they will have less of an issue than maybe some other teams.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. But you may be right. I mean, they may decide to give everybody a break and suggest that, you know, this is a short-term thing. We've gone through trouble. You've gone through trouble. We're going to help each other out. We want you to come into our building, and we're going to cut you a break on the ticket price. I think some teams will handle it differently than others, that's for sure.
Matt in Lake Zurich, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Waddle, Sylvie, great show. How are you guys doing today?
We're good, thanks.
Good. Listen, real quick, there's a great article in today's Wall Street Journal. I recommend you read it. It's about the Champions League game. It was held at San Siro Stadium in Milan. Waddle, I'm sure you're familiar. I know your daughters are all soccer players. So this game was held on February 19th between Valencia and the team from Bergamo. I think it's called Atalantica. And this was 6 weeks ago. And at the time, I think there was only 100 infections or 100 cases in Italy at the time. And now they're looking back at this game where 40,000 fans were in the stadium in Milan, and they're saying that this was one of the main causes of the huge outbreak in Lombardy and the Milan area. I just think they say these big stadiums are just a huge petri dish for this disease, for this infection. And on your conversation, I just think it's going to be a long time for people to get over that fear of being in a big crowded stadium. I just don't. I mean, ticket prices. I don't see that ending real soon.
I think it's a great point, and that's why I said I think the fear factor is something that these teams are going to have to, and maybe it will lead them to lower ticket prices. I'm just a skeptic when it comes to the financials of professional sports.
You've always been right.
Because it's just such a big business. Their mentality in a perfect world is, listen, you don't want these season tickets? I get 10 guys behind you that want them. So we appreciate your support to this point, but too bad, so Sarah.
Who's lining up for the Bulls tickets?
That's an excellent point. I think that the fear factor is, I don't care if your ticket's $25, $35, $45. There are some people that aren't going to be willing to go, whether it's $10 cheaper, $20 cheaper, because of the fear factor. Now, there are other people we know. There are people that are still going to beaches and hanging out with other people and ignoring some of the warnings that have been in the edicts that have been passed out there. Those people may go ahead and buy the tickets and don't give a rat's rear end anyway. But I think there's going to be a large portion of people out there that, you know, are going to shy away from going to, you know, crowded stadiums for a while, and how that affects ticket prices, I think, would be really interesting to see.
Yeah, I think you're right. While there's definitely a percentage of people who will definitely look at going to a sporting event differently going forward, but once governments give the all clear to go ahead and actually put on large public events, I think the vast majority of people will say, okay, I'm ready to get on with living my life now the way I once did. But yeah, there'll definitely be a portion of people. I don't think it'll be big enough, though, where once you get the all clear, that's fine.
But what the caller was saying is really important. It's the difference between getting the all clear for a crowded 60,000 seat stadium and the all clear for a baseball team to play a game in front of an empty stadium.
Oh, yeah,
they're separate
apart.
Conversations.
They're completely different. And that was, again, pre kind of like, we bet on the game he referenced. We lost money because,
well, we lost on all of the soccer games.
But we were all looking at the world a little differently, you know, and people weren't told not to go to that game. If government officials, when we get past this and people say it is okay for a professional sports team to go ahead and have crowds in stadiums, I think a lot of people will have gotten to a point where either there's a vaccine or, as we've talked about, therapies that will be able to treat for the coronavirus. So I think we'll be in a different frame of mind.
Or will there be a lack of trust that exists because there was so many thoughts?
That's different. A different question.
Look, I don't know. I think it's going to be an interesting bridge for these professional teams to cross. I think it's going to be a difficult bridge for fans to cross as well with the fear factor. We're in a place that we have never been before.
Never.
So I don't know how people are going to respond. I think the best way to gather as much revenue as humanly possible if you're a professional team is to get your season underway or back underway and capture whatever television money you can get. And it'll be from the networks. There'll be whatever advertising keys. I think most of these pro sports leagues are going to have to do some of their modeling with little to no fan participation at all.
All right. Get your celebrities to call in 312-332-3776. You have an hour today and you have two more days, Thursday and Friday, to have someone call in. We've got meats and steak to give away, $500 worth. We also have gambling vouchers from Hawthorne. We want to thank our sponsors, Meats by Lins. Visit eatangus.com. $500 to their great business and $250 online to Club Hawthorne from Hawthorne Racecourse. Hawthorne Racecourse, Chicago's hometown track. Bet now at clubhawthorne.com. So have them call in and get them some way to call in and credit you. And if they're the biggest name, you'll win $750 worth of prizes. Michael Wilbon is a big deal. He joins us in 2 minutes.